Are you an entrepreneur that would like to quickly free up and create more cash flow and lasting wealth? Welcome to the Chris Miles Money Show. Chris Miles is a cash flow expert and the financial advocate for the entrepreneur. Chris will teach you how to create more freedom and more prosperity right now, not about saving 25 to 40 years from now. It's all about creating wealth and prosperity today. He's been featured on U.S. News, CNN Money, Bankrate.com, interviewed internationally on TV and radio, and has a high reputation for getting his clients fast, life-altering financial results with his company, Money Ripples. Learn more at MoneyRipples.com. Now, here's your host, Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, your cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Welcome you out to an awesome show today. Hey, this show is about you and for you. Those of you that are tired of working so hard for your money, and you're ready for your money to start working harder for you. So you can work because you want to, not because you have to. You want that freedom, that cash flow, and that prosperity today so you can be with those that you love and do what you love when you want to. And so I welcome you guys out. I appreciate you guys being a part of this movement, part of sharing it, because I know you're not just trying to create comfort for yourself, which is obviously a great benefit, but obviously you're trying to bless other people's lives. You're trying to create that ripple effect, not beyond your own life, to create a legacy, something more meaningful than just make good money. And so appreciate having you guys on. Reminder, check out our website, moneyripples.com. You know, great blogs that I wrote like 2 years ago. So you could check that out. So anyways, today I want to introduce a special guest by the name of Kevin Bupp here. Now, Kevin is a successful real estate investor with over 16 years of experience. He now actually educates investors on how to locate, acquire, and create higher than average returns from, get this, and this is what I'm so excited to have him on for, with mobile home park investing. So he's going to share his expertise with you today. He's also the host of the Investing for Cashflow podcast, which has become one of the hottest podcasts on iTunes. And in addition to that, Kevin is not just an awesome business person or investor. He's also passionate about giving back and is, you know, founder of several charitable organizations, including runningforbrews.com and Social Running Club, which I'll probably should become a part of as well since I'm a runner. And as well as a 72 hours to Key West, which is an annual bike ride. So Kevin, welcome to our show.
Oh, Chris, thanks for having me. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Hey, so tell us a little bit about your story. Like, how'd you get into investing and what even took you down the path to eventually do mobile homes?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I'll try to keep the condensed version here. I'm 40 years old now. I got introduced to real estate when I was 19, still in school, you know, in college, and was introduced by a local guy that just happened to be dating the mother of my girlfriend at the time. So kind of a funny story there, but followed him around, was kind of, he was my mentor for a year. I basically worked for him for free. I mean, I literally followed him in classes and tending bar in the evenings. I was with David at his home office out in the field, just basically following him around, trying to learn everything I could about how he created this unique lifestyle. I came from a very working class family, blue collar family, and he had a very nice car, dressed really nice, and just seemed to have his life together, and didn't work a traditional, or didn't take the traditional path of working like a 9-to-5. And that was very new to me. And it was, there was an allure to that. And so took about a year of following him around, learning the craft, and that was single family investing. I started buying properties when I was 20 and continued that trend for a number of years, building up quite a large portfolio of single family rental homes. Then started buying apartment complexes. This is back like between 2004 and 2007. So I had hundreds of doors and things were going great. Had a very successful mortgage company. 2008 occurred and things completely took a downward spiral very, very quickly. And spent a couple years trying to find myself, trying to figure out what had just happened and how to really, you know, rebuild things. And that's when a lot of the charitable endeavors really started playing out. I really was looking for something different in life other than just chasing money, and had a bad taste in my mouth as well, and thought I would focus more on helping others than worrying about what had just occurred. And ultimately, it's been a game changer in my life. Like, the bad really turned into something good. And I'm very grateful for, you know, those really challenging years. But with that being said, 2010 and a half ish, I had this burning desire to get back into real estate. I was ready to dive back in. And I was on this journey to figure out how things had changed after the crash, right? I mean, you know, the landscape was completely different, right? I mean, completely different playing field. And I really did. I stepped away from it 100%. I mean, I literally turned off the faucet and worked through, like, basically instead of buying properties, you know, trying to save properties or going through foreclosures, and it was a complete disaster. Mm-hmm. And so during this journey of talking to folks, people that had either made it through the downturn or just started investing after, you know, the crash happened, I knew I wanted to get into multifamily. I knew I could scale again a lot faster buying apartment complexes. I knew I was not going to buy a single family again. It just was not an efficient for me to build, you know, rebuild an empire. And so it was going to be apartments. And as I was on this journey of meeting a bunch of folks and talking to people and just getting back into the game, I met a guy by the name of Randy. And Randy was a mobile home park investor. And now, I had no interest in learning about his business. I didn't set up a lunch with him to learn about mobile home parks. I enjoy meeting new people. And mm-hmm. he was very successful in his own right. And so I thought that if all that came out of this was me, you know, meeting a new contact, a new friend, then it was well worth it. And anyway, I had a 2-hour lunch with Randy. He introduced me to the world of mobile home parks, you know, sold me on all these different reasons why it was so much better than everything I had done in the past. And he piqued my interest enough to where I left that meeting with a newfound focus of not to build or buy apartment complexes, but to purchase at least one mobile home park and either prove or disprove, you know, all these great things that he had told me about this niche. And so that's what happened. I literally dedicated the next year, a little bit over a year, to learning everything I could, underwriting deals, making offers, bought a park about 14 months later. And that was the first one. And it went really well. Bought the second one, third one, fourth one. I mean, so like the trend went on and on. Now we're in 13 different states. This is all we do. We raise, you know, capital from outside high net worth individuals. And we, again, own parks now in 13 states and we're growing. So this is our core focus.
So obviously, I know this is going to be a question that people come with, right? Because I know I do. So my background, for those that are longtime listeners, they've probably heard me mention this before. But I mean, when I was a kid, I spent, you know, 4 or 5 years in Oregon in a trailer park, you know, and we had the nice home. We had the double wide manufactured home, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were pretty cool compared to some of the other people that actually had literally, you know, single wide trailers. You know, why this method? Because I mean, you would think you would attract, I was in that park. You wouldn't want to be around a lot of those people and you didn't know what half the time they were cooking up in their rooms, you know? So it was a pretty bad place. So, you know, why would you even want to go into something like this?
Yeah, you know, and I want to back up a little bit and let's speak to the clientele that we serve. You know, as with, I like to give the comparison of single family residential neighborhoods and even apartment complexes, right? Like you mm-hmm. can go to any part of the world, any part of the country, any part of the U.S., and you could find neighborhoods where you live today. You can find neighborhoods that are really rough single family homes, really rough apartment complexes where you wouldn't go, you know, in the middle of the night. You wouldn't even dare go probably in the daytime, right? And then on the other end of that spectrum, you could find very nice high end neighborhoods that are A-class, that attract a very qualified demographic, that pay their bills on time and aren't into, you know, drugs, sex, and rock and roll, right? So, and you can find everything in the middle. Yeah. Same thing with mobile home parks. Unfortunately, we get kind of tossed into the negative bucket. You know, basically all mobile home parks are bad. They attract the bad elements of the earth. That's just not the case. I mean, there are really rough parks that we would never consider owning. They are not in the right areas. They do not attract the right clientele. There's some other parks on the other end of that spectrum that are very high end. It's a very much a lifestyle choice. It's not affordable housing. It's a second home, mm-hmm. a winter home for folks. You know, there's swimming pools, there's activities directors. I mean, they're, you know, very high-end communities. And then there's everything in between. Everything in between typically services, you know, the hardworking blue-collar folks of the world, the folks that really want the best for their kids. They work, you know, hourly jobs, or you know, they work as manager at McDonald's or at Walmart. They want their kids still go to the best schools. They want to provide a, you know, a good experience and a good upbringing for their children and a safe environment. And that's what we tend to invest in. That's the type of communities that we buy. They're in good markets, good parts of town. That doesn't mean if we buy them, they might not have a little bit of a bad element, but we work really hard to get that bad element out of there and bring the good folks in that are really looking for that affordable, clean, safe, and quiet place to raise their family. So I don't know if that answers your question, but we do not serve that really rough, you know, crime-ridden demographic.
How do you manage that? Like, how do you, you're able to attract the right clientele?
Yeah. I mean, part of it is where we buy, right? So like location solves many problems. Mm. So location's everything. We could take a park that's in distress that has a bad tenant base currently, but if it's in a phenomenal location, you know, good school district surrounded by good amenities, close to the interstate, It's a growing economic base, lots of employment diversity. If it's got those solid fundamentals in place, then I know that there's good, hardworking folks that want that place to live. And the folks that are in there that are bad elements, I know that I can move them out and other good people will be willing to move in. So we just put a really good screening process in place. We'll go into a community like that that's in a little bit of distress. We'll spend a good bit of money making capital improvements onto the roads, to the infrastructure, to the general aesthetics of the community. And again, we'll get rid of the people that are creating the problems, and we'll replace them with the good people that really want an affordable place and also be in the good school districts, be near the the shopping, the retail core, be near the interstate, be near their jobs. And it's typically not hard if you get the market part right. Whereas if you buy a park in a really crappy market, no matter how much money you pump into it, you can't change the location. It's just not going to change. So you can make it pretty and nice and put iron gates around it, and fountains at the entrance. But if it's in a really bad part of town, you're not going to attract the folks that would typically be drawn to all those high-end features. You're going to still attract the bad elements. So
sure, right. And so when you buy a park, do you buy just the park? Do you buy the trailers? Do you buy both?
Yeah, in a perfect world, we wouldn't own any trailers. Unfortunately, we're not in a perfect world. So there are certain situations where we do end up acquiring mobile homes. Most of the time, it's due to how the old owner that we purchased from was operating the community. What happens a lot of times is most of these mobile home communities were originally built in the beginning to where the developer came in, built the infrastructure, put the lots in place, and then the end consumer or the residents own their home, right? That's how these things were originally intended to be. Over time, people pass away. The heirs don't want the units. A lot of times the park owner has to take the units back. They have a decision to either try to resell it, or sometimes they just make a decision to turn it into a rental. And so the business kind of has morphed over time in some of these communities to where we go to buy the park, and then all of a sudden it's got maybe 10% of the inventory is units that we now are taking on to ownership of.
Right.
So I think we own about 2,000 lots, and of those 2,000 lots, about 10% of our total lot count is made up of units that we own. So it's not our choice. We try to sell them. We try to sell them fairly quickly. That's our end goal. So we offer very creative financing solutions to buyers that want to have the American dream of home ownership, to where they can get in for lower down payments, affordable monthly payments. And then we create very, very win-win financing structure so that they can own it fairly quickly.
So at the end of the day, become the bank.
Yeah. At the end of the day, what we've identified is that once they own the home, the chances of them moving is very, very low. I mean, the turnover is very low. We have some residents that have lived in our communities more than 30 years, and many, like at least 50% that have probably lived in our communities over 10 years. Once they own that home, it's not like an apartment where they can just pack up their mattress and their bags in a matter of a night and leave, right? Like it's a completely different scenario at that point in time. They've got a physical structure there that costs a lot of money to move. And so it's our goal is to get them into home ownership as fast as possible.
Yeah. So I know you've done tons of investing. I mean, you've done everything from apartment buildings, single family homes, office buildings, land, condos, all that kind of stuff, right? So why did you pick mobile homes? Like, what was it about it that you said, man, this is the thing?
Yeah. So again, I go back to Randy. Randy, it's funny, he kind of beat me up a little bit during that luncheon because he was really harping on why mobile home parks are so much better than apartment complexes, which is kind of what I was going to start buying again. And a few of the big things is that really caught my attention is it's the only asset class that has a diminishing supply, meaning that there's more mobile home parks that are getting shut down or redeveloped every year than that are being brought to market new. In the last 10 years, there was less than 30 new communities brought online, and way more than that were redeveloped or shut down. And so it's got this barrier to entry automatically built into where if I find a great opportunity in a good market, good solid market, I don't have to worry about a developer coming in and building a new one down the road. So if there's a plot of land down the road, I don't have to worry about someone coming in and building a new one. Here's the reason why. As I'd mentioned in the beginning, we've kind of got stuck into the negative bucket of what people perceive mobile home parks to be. Mm-hmm. And so with that, municipalities don't want them. Municipalities try to blame crime on the parks themselves, not necessarily on the people, right?
And right. So
we get lumped into this bucket of like, well, not in my backyard. We're not approving that. No one wants a mobile home park. All that's going to do is attract the wrong elements to town. So that's one of the big reasons. Another reason is the underlying tax base is typically, mobile home parks take up a good amount of land. Mm-hmm. And so most land where mobile home parks would be built would probably have a higher and better use anyway. From a tax standpoint, you know, an apartment complex, a commercial building of some sort, retail center, office building, in addition to it having a higher and better use, most of those other higher and better uses attract a higher end demographic as well, mm-hmm. versus what a mobile home park would attract. And so there's just not many really compelling compelling reasons to sell a municipality on why they should accept a new mobile home park to be built. So that was very intriguing to me that it had such a big barrier to entry. Another big one was, we spoke to a little bit, is, you know, the turnover is very low. If these individuals, the residents that own their own homes, they stay for a very long time. And typically how it plays out is if they do want to move, to move a single wide, it's $5,000 to $6,000. A double wide can be upwards of $10,000 to $12,000, depending how far you're moving it. Mm-hmm. Most folks that live in a mobile home park don't have that much money laying around. And so typically if they put their home up for, or if they want to move, they put their home up for sale, like you or I might do in our single family neighborhood, right? We put it up for sale,
right,
paying the taxes and the utilities until it sells to someone new. That person moves in, they take over, you know, making the tax payments, utilities, this, that, and the other. Same thing occurs. And so what happens there is that you really don't, being the owner, we don't get any downtime. Like, we don't have any vacancy to where there's like a turn where we have to go in and renovate a unit like you would in an apartment complex.
Yeah.
You know, months of downtime where you have no revenue coming in. That doesn't exist in the space when the residents own that, you know, own that home. And one of the other big compelling features to me that Randy sold me on was the management intensity. You know, if we don't own these units, we're not getting calls, maintenance calls, because the residents' roofs are leaking, their plumbing's clogged up, their air conditioning broke. They own all that. They own those units, and they own everything that goes along with the unit. And so it's not our responsibility. They're not calling us when their AC breaks. They're calling the HVAC tech to come out and fix it. So
yeah,
with the units we own, we do have that responsibility. But again, it's a very small portion. And so like a 100-unit mobile home park, the management associated with that and the maintenance intensity is night and day different from a 100-door apartment complex. It'd be a night and day difference of how much staff you really need to run it.
An example of like maybe a park that you've purchased, like how much was it? What was the cash flow or the returns you're able to create from that? You know, give us an idea of what that would look like if somebody wanted to do it on their own.
Yeah, I mean, so it's all across the board. Whatever example I'm going to give you, just know that it's everything's a case-by-case basis.
Of course.
Every market's different, but I mean, I can give you a recent example of a deal, maybe a couple of deals we just did over the last 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. We just purchased a park in Mississippi, a really good market in Mississippi. I won't go into particulars in the city or anything like that, but it was a 153 space park. We purchased it for, I think it was $2.45 million. Some of the big value add components there that we saw as an opportunity was the guy had not, he had literally had not raised the lot rents in like 10 years, which is somewhat common in our space. You know, it was an older mom and pop owner. They'd owned it for 15 years. And just, he didn't really do a good job of, number one, keeping up with market rents, and number two, keeping up with community upkeep, you know, like with the main, I mean, just the roads had potholes. He hadn't enforced rules. So a lot of the residents' trailers had skirting missing and you know, cars outside that are broken down. It was a nice community. It was in a very good school district, good area, good location right off the interstate. And so we bought it. We bought it with the intent of going in and spending a couple $100,000 on the improvements, firing the existing manager because he was basically, you know, I think he was selling drugs through the park. I mean, just, you know, bad element.
Right.
Picking out all the folks that that just weren't paying on time, that had big delinquent balances going. And we're about, I think we closed on that in October of last year. So we're 7 months, 7 months or so through acquisition. We just did a rent increase of, I think now we're up at like $240 a month. We bought it, they were like $185 a month. So we did a pretty decent rent increase there. So we increased our revenues just by doing a lot rent increase of $137,000 a year in that park. We put about $250,000 into it in improvements, road repairs, you know, renovations, tree trimming, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right now, with the loan that we have in place on it, with the different improvements we've made, our return on that park is somewhere in the high teens, you know, probably 17-18% cash on cash return. But our projections, as we hold this thing, we really look at like a 5 and 10 year projection.
Yeah.
We'll exceed 20% internal rate of return. And that's on a very conservative basis. That would be assuming that we exited out of it in like a 5-year stint. And so
that's excellent. Wow.
We look to achieve like our targets typically to achieve, within the first 2 to 3 years, mid-teen, cash on cash returns. Once we truly stabilize it, once we maximize the value, and that can be many different things as far as maximizing value. Some parks take a little bit longer than others to really, get them to the standards that we want. Mm-hmm. That park, I think we had about an 18-month timeline to really get it there, and we're well on the way to do that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Wow. That's great. And now with somebody's trying brand new, they probably wouldn't want to buy it that much, right? How would they ease in if they want to try it?
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you another example. And again, I don't want to make this seem like it's a norm, but it's a good example to use of what you can run into out there. One of the other parks we bought about 3 years ago, it was a much smaller park. It's 52 lots. We bought it in Richmond, Virginia, right outside of Richmond, Virginia. And it was owned by this attorney out of D.C., Washington, D.C. He had a very successful law practice for many years. He owned this park for like 38 years. He was great at practicing law, but he was a horrible mobile home park owner. he kept the park up really well. So he spent a lot of money with the improvements. So it was a very clean, well-maintained community. Mm. But he was horrible at the operations side as far as payroll was – literally payroll was over $100,000 a year. It should have been like $25,000. and he had about 20 units in that park that he owned. So they were rentals, and he had a horrible screening process. And basically what that means is it didn't exist. If you had money, you can move in. So what was happening is they were on average turning those 20 units about 2.5 times a year. So he would,
whoa,
get money, you could move in. They would move in. They would stop paying the rent right away. They would go through the eviction process, have to renovate the unit again, re-rent it, do the same thing. And they were just turning units left and right, spending so much money doing it. So when we bought the park, we paid $660,000 for it, which was, if you looked at it from a cap rate standpoint, we overpaid for it. I think we bought it at about a 5 cap, which it was not a 5 cap park. The gross income for the trailing 12 months of us buying it was like $260,000, but the NOI was like $28,000. So like his expenses were out of control. So we overpaid for it, but we knew we could fix those problems very quickly. We went in within 3 months, we eliminated $100,000 of the payroll, and we put a screening process in place. It took us a little bit of time to work through some of the bad folks that were already in eviction. And the first year that we had, literally the first true 12 months of ownership, we got that NOI up to nearly $150,000. So
wow.
We sold that part. We paid $650 for it. He owner financed the forest. We put 25% down. We owned it for about 2.5 years, just from the cash flow alone, the net cash flow. We got our original capital back before we sold it. We sold it like August of last year for $1.87 million.
Oh, man.
And we put about $40,000 into it to like, because it was clean. It was in really good shape. So the money we put into it was just minor stuff, like some tree trimming and just little things, little stuff to get it up to par.
Wow. That's awesome.
So that's an achievable one. For someone that's got, $100,000, $150,000 laying around, not that a lot of people have $150,000 laying around, but like you could figure out how to come up with $150,000 if it's a good enough deal.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying there's a lot of, they're always going to be home runs like that one, but like that's real. That's not an anomaly. Like we've done other deals just like that. That's a good example because it's a smaller one. Mm-hmm. The down payment is a very manageable number for a lot of people.
Yeah.
We're not talking millions of dollars, right?
No, I know plenty of my clients that would fit that perfectly. that's awesome. So, well, cool. I really appreciate you being on, Kevin, because this is awesome. And again, like I said, this is the first time we've had this strategy mentioned on the show. So I love it. I know you have the podcast, the Investing for Cashflow podcast. What are some other ways people can follow you or even learn more about how to do this for themselves?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I host two weekly podcasts. One is called Real Estate Investing for Cashflow. And that is a commercial real estate investing show where we basically cover every different commercial asset class from mobile home parks to apartment complexes to office buildings, retail, even niche stuff like self-storage and marinas and car washes and things like that. So that's a show that's all we focus on is those different types of asset investments. And then we also have a show called the Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast, which is obviously, as the name would say, it's all about mobile home park investing. So if someone wants to learn more about this niche or to even make a determination if it might be a good fit for them, I'd say, go listen to a number of the episodes on the Mobile Home Park Show. You know, there's a lot of more. It's just me and my partner. We go very granular into the business and our model and case studies. And I also interview a lot of other park operators so you can kind of hear their story, hear it from someone else's perspective. I think I've got about 110 episodes there. So there's a lot of free content there. And if someone has an interest after that, you know, mobilehomeparkacademy.com is, you know, the website for our mobile home park business. And then kevinbupp.com is my personal website. And if they want to reach me, they can find me there as well. So lots of different ways. I'm not too hard to find.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely put that in the show notes so we make sure people can, you know, access the stuff, get the information they need. And that's awesome. So, Kevin, again, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for having me, man. It's been a lot of fun. Appreciate you inviting me over.
You bet. Everybody else, hey, thanks for joining us today. Feel free to check out Kevin's stuff, his podcast, as well as information to see how you can actually create some awesome returns doing something that's so creative, like even investing in mobile homes. So, hey, guys, I hope you have a wonderful and prosperous week, and we'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to The Chris Miles Money Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and make us a part of your daily routine. And check out our blogs and learn more about Chris, his services, and how we can help you at moneyripples.com. Join us next time on The Chris Miles Money Show.